This is 1-2-1 on BCB 106.6 FM.
Welcome to 1-2-1 with me, Carol Moss, on BCB 106.6 FM. This is the programme where I talk to the movers and the shakers and the active citizens of Bradford, the district, West Yorkshire and beyond, find out a little bit about their hobbies, their interests, their lives, and get them to play some of their favourite pieces of music. My guest today is Alison Lowe. Alison is the Deputy Mayor for policing and crime in West Yorkshire. Welcome, 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 Alison. Lovely to have you here in Bradford Studio.
Well, thank you so much for asking me.
Alison, tell us a little bit about your role and your work as Deputy Mayor.
So my role is to support Tracy, our mayor, to deliver the police and crime function. So even though she is the police and crime commissioner legally, she delegates the vast majority of that role to me, and I'm responsible for holding the chief constable to account, which Tracy and I both do via a series of meetings. We're responsible for community engagement, which I tend to do the majority of. We're responsible for connecting with the public around their priorities, because it's really important that the priorities that we're holding the police to account are the policing priorities of the communities that we're serving. We are responsible for bringing together all the criminal justice agencies, so that's the and crime bit. So I chair the local criminal justice board. We hold the police fund, so even though the chief constable is responsible operationally for spending the police fund, it's actually held by the mayor. So that's over £500 million that she has responsibility for. And then I have a national role as a member of the Association of Police and Crime Commissioners. And in that role, I lead on equality, diversity and race disparities. And I'm also a lead for transparency and integrity. So that's a lot of work on trust and confidence, working alongside the Independent Office for Police Conduct.
So that's a huge role.
It is.
Both nationally and regionally.
Yes.
How do you work the balance of that? What do you find yourself most sort of drawn to or most needing to do?
So the community contact, the engagement with the community is massive, and it tends to be the thing that I do most of all. I mean, I'm in a lot of meetings, I have to say. I chair a lot of meetings because the policing governance is a huge part of my role. But the thing that I'm drawn to most is visiting the communities of West Yorkshire, talking to them about their priorities, their concerns, but also understanding the great things that they're doing to support community safety. So the mayor has a huge commissioning role, something else that I'm also involved in, and we have around £18 million a year that we commission out to various bodies, and we need to understand what's working well, what initiatives there are already across the county, so that we can complement and not duplicate those, but we also need to know the things that we need to keep on commissioning, so that involves lots and lots of visits, talking to beneficiaries, and also understanding what those delivery partners need from us, but also from our funder, the main fund, which is the Home Office.
And what are we talking about when we're talking about community safety? What sort of issues are we talking about?
So huge issues around antisocial behaviour and other neighbourhood crime. Obviously, violence against women and girls is massive, and one of the huge planks that the police and crime plan is built on. We also have concerns around speeding cars and antisocial use of other motor vehicles, off-road bikes, etc. We get contact from traders, worried about shoplifting, worried about criminals affecting their ability to trade and to survive in what is a very difficult time for everybody. So quite wide ranging, but I would say ASB, violence against women and girls, and antisocial use of motor vehicles are the top three.
Right, and how would you say West Yorkshire is doing across the board when you sit sort of nationally? What do you feel about what's happening in West Yorkshire and what sort of progress we're making?
That's a difficult question because we could always be doing better. And even though I get to see lots of data about how West Yorkshire is performing compared to our most similar group, so forces such as GMP, Greater Manchester, West Midlands, that are similar sizes to us, I get to see a lot of data and a lot of national data of all the forces, especially around things like violent crime, murders, for example. For our size and the funding we get, we're doing relatively well. We also have been rated outstanding by HMIC, so His Majesty's Inspector of Constabulary came to visit us in 2021, and they've rated us as outstanding. One of the things that we're really good at is things like serious and organised crime, for example. We're outstanding for that. We're outstanding for the way that we use our resources and the way we plan our resources. Outstanding for neighbourhood policing and the fact that we've focused and prioritised neighbourhood policing when many other forces decided that that's a cost that they're not prepared to meet. So lots and lots of good news stories. But we know that policing is not able to do everything for everyone. So if you call the police for a burglary, they will definitely attend. Whether they attend the same day, I cannot guarantee. But if you have someone break into your car or your shed, it's highly unlikely that a police officer or a PCSO will attend your property. If you experience harassment on the street, a hate crime on the street, and you haven't got you don't know who the perpetrator is. Again, it's not that the police won't investigate that. They'll look for CCTV. They'll look to see if there's any way that they can identify that person. But these are the crimes where people feel less assured that they will get justice. And I think that we need to be really clear that West Yorkshire Police was cut £140 million between 2010 and 2019. We lost 2,000 police officers. Neighbourhood policing and PCSOs were decimated. We've started building that back up, but we are now looking at, we have to call them efficiencies, that's what the government wants us to call them. We're looking at another £100 million worth of cuts over the next 4 years. So the 2023 budget that we have just agreed, which the people of West Yorkshire voted, fed back on in terms of the precept, that will incorporate £26 million worth of cuts or efficiencies, whichever you want to call them. And in order to deliver that, we're going to be seeing 10% vacancy factor for police staff and for PCSOs and 8% police staff vacancies. So basically that's 10% less PCSOs, 8% less police staff.
So you have ambitious plans.
Yeah.
I mean, let's focus, for example, on the violence against women and girls, domestic violence,
yeah,
external violence, because we hear a lot about them in the news, and many, many people are impacted and affected by violence and violent crime. How do you balance those when you've got a really, good set of proposals to work with the community to develop those things? How will that work? I mean, are people right to be a little bit cautious or sceptical about, the plans?
Not really, because the plans are the plans of the people of West Yorkshire. We did a big consultation exercise called Tell Tracy. Over 5,000 people were really pleased, fed back. We tried our very best to be more inclusive than ever before. So we approached a local learning disability charity, for example, who put out the survey in Easy Read. We had the ability to translate it into a plethora of different languages. It was actually published in lots of different languages. You could get hard copies from the local library or other public buildings, as well as an online survey. So we tried to reach a really wide variety of communities. We've got a database of about 10,000 organisations across West Yorkshire from a wide range of demographics that we also sent the survey to. So it was a really, really good process that gave us some great feedback. And the top three priorities for the people of West Yorkshire were CSE, Child Sexual Exploitation and Abuse, ASB, Neighbourhood Crime, and then third was the antisocial use of police of vehicles, of off-road bikes, et cetera, speeding. So they're in the plan, they're high up in the plan, and we use that focus to hold the police and the Chief Constable to account. So we have regular performance meetings which are themed around the priorities that are in the plan, and those are the priorities that the members of the public have told us are their priorities. And we are making progress. Obviously, there are so many resources and they have to be targeted. So the police use a process called Thrive. So what's the threat? What's the harm? What's the risk? And they use that to decide which crimes to prioritise. And it's the same as all of us. When we're in our homes, we prioritise the funding that we've got on, you know, school dinners, food for our family, heating and all the rest of it. And so I think that we're able to focus the police on the priorities of the people of West Yorkshire.
That sounds fantastic, and the consultation process obviously worked. But again, raising issues of, you know, the equality and diversity and inclusion, racial justice, violence against women, how, if those are not necessarily the three greatest priorities of the people of West Yorkshire, but they are for the people who are experiencing them, and that support from the police. And the police have been criticised, obviously, in report after report for failing to act where issues are raised of concern of that matter. How does that fit?
So, for example, I work really closely with the Racial Justice Network here in Bradford, and they have been able to raise issues of particular concern. So I'll give you an example. When Matt Burns-Williamson was a police and crime commissioner, they raised with him the issue of fingerprinting people in cars on the roadside and then sharing that digital fingerprint with the Home Office database. And West Yorkshire were doing that routinely. And Racial Justice Network was saying, well, that's potentially racist because actually we think you're doing that more based on the ethnicity of the person you're stopping. And therefore, you're making an assumption that that person is an illegal person in this country and that is racist. So you need to stop doing that. And West Yorkshire Police would not stop. So that was raised with me by Racial Justice Network in a couple of meetings that we had. And we were able to raise that with West Yorkshire Police and negotiate with them a process by which they would stop routinely stopping people, fingerprinting them and sending that data to the Home Office. There's now a process. It has to be agreed. If somebody wants to, you can still stop and fingerprint somebody if they're not telling you who they are or you don't think that they're telling you the truth, but you cannot send it to the Home Office database unless it's been signed off by an inspector. So very similar to if you want to expand your stop and search Section 60 powers, for example, that's got to go through a senior officer. We get an audited report to show how those powers have been used in the last 12 months. So we're actually awaiting that report now. I've asked for that report because it is about a year since the police said that it was last January, they said that they were going to introduce these new governance arrangements to protect the public. Now, that would not have happened without that Bradford-based charity raising that with me. They also raised an issue of what was perceived to be different treatment of the Roma community here in Bradford. So a person from the Roma community alleged that Roma people were being stopped, on a regular basis. Actually, I put that to West Yorkshire Police. They were very upset about that because actually they've got a really good relationship with the Roma community here. They've got a Roma lead and they were able to say, well, that's the perception of one person, but actually other Roma people, we contacted a group and they said that's not our experience. So we were able to dispel that myth because it was a myth. And what I said is if anyone has got evidence of disproportionality or unfair treatment from West Yorkshire Police from the Roma community, please come and tell me about that. Come and share that experience and I can put that to the police.
So that's a very sort of direct and personal approach that you have.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, Excellent. Let's have a piece of music. I asked you to choose some music. Do you listen to a lot of music?
Oh, I love music. I tend to listen to it mainly in the car because obviously I'm bobbing around all over the place. So, yeah, really looking forward to this.
What's your first one?
So, my first one is The Beatles. This Boy, because I grew up with this song, I grew up with The Beatles, and this is really special for me.
There by the Beatles, and you're listening to BCB 106.6 FM. I'm talking to Alison Lowe, and I'm Carol Moss. Now, Alison Lowe, let's go back to the issue of violence against women and girls.
Yeah.
How does West Yorkshire approach that, which is not necessarily seen to be of a sort of community priority? But what do you think needs to be done? What do you personally feel needs to happen to make our places safety? Everything from sort of harassment in the streets to domestic abuse, etc. It covers a wide range of things.
Yeah. So first of all, I would not agree that it's not a community priority. I think that many, many people, men and women, are very concerned about violence against women and girls. You know, women are mothers, aunts, sisters, children, daughters. And I think it's important that we recognise that 1.2 million people in West Yorkshire are women. So it's a huge issue. And we're doing lots and lots of things on a strategic policy and also a practical level. And we're doing it in partnership with West Yorkshire Police, but also by listening to the communities that we serve. So, for example, West Yorkshire Police have a violence against women and girls strategy, which they report against to the mayor and I. And as a result of that strategy, loads of really innovative practices emerging. So I'll give you an example here in Bradford. The Bradford University students were complaining regularly about street-based harassment, about catcalling. It's not, I don't think that's a nice word for it. I think it's a crime. And the police, because of the Violence Against Women and Girls strategy, because of the flexibilities and the opportunities that that strategy gave them, decided to look at this really creatively alongside Bradford Council and the university. They realised that Bradford has got a PSPO, a Public Spaces Protection Order, for the whole of Bradford, and actually it's about the harassment caused by motor vehicles, which is why you've got upstairs side. And they decided that actually they could expand the criteria to street-based harassment. So people in cars shouting at girls in a sexualised and harassing way could come under the PSPO, and that's exactly what's happened. They do, the police can drive past the universities, students or the university can phone the police and tell them about particular incidents. So there's been about 30 arrests made under the PSPO, 15 of them for street-based harassment of women and girls. So that's just one example. Another example is from the mayor, is the support that she's giving to Bradford, the nighttime economy. So first of all, I am the patron of Bradford at night, and I see that as a really important job to support women and girls in Bradford, but all the citizens of Leeds who of Bradford who choose to go out. And so the mayor has given considerable monies to fund your night marshals, your taxi marshals, your safe spaces, Ask for Angela, all funded by the mayor. I'm going to come in a couple of weeks to visit the safe space here in Bradford. So she's also funded the world first walk safe app here in Bradford. Anybody, man or woman, boy or girl, will be able to use the WalkSafe app to plot their journey, to share that journey with friends. But also, we're working alongside West Yorkshire Police in the development of this app, so you'll be able to see where the hotspots are. So there's a national app where West Yorkshire people can feed into, so that's all going to be overlaid onto the app. There'll be information about where the taxi marshals are, where the Ask for Angela trained pubs and clubs are, where the night marshals are.
Just remind us what Ask for Angela is.
So Ask for Angela is an accreditation, a scheme whereby anyone, man or woman, boy or girl, who feels that they are at risk in a nighttime economy venue can go and ask for Angela, and then the staff are trained to intervene to get you to a private, quiet place, a safe place. It might be that you need a taxi home, you don't feel safe. It might be that you think you've been spiked. It might be that you're worried about being followed. It might be that you've lost your, the people that you're out with. You might need your phone recharging. Whatever it is, the staff are trained to immediately act and get you to a safe space where the proper help can then be given.
I have to say, anybody who's been to the loo in any of those public places will have seen an Ask for Angela poster, and it's very successful. And one of the problems that we have as a community is actually getting the message. So let's say Bradford Town Centre. I started going out into Bradford Town Centre a lot more than I ever used to, because I do feel it's become a much safer place than it was, say, a few years ago. But the culture, if you like, is that people don't come in because they fear. And it's that fear of not feeling safe. And it's very hard to actually encourage people to come back into the centre or stay over in the town centre because of those long history and many experiences.
Yeah, and some of that is perception. Some of that is unfair media, because I think that Bradford does get some unfair media. People tend to focus on the negative. There's a lot of great things happening in Bradford, a lot of brilliant organisations operating across Bradford, and there are lots of partnerships ongoing, trying to keep people safe, working with the police, working with the local authority. And it is no more dangerous than any other city centre. And if you ask me, would I rather come into Bradford on a Saturday night or Leeds on a Saturday night? I mean, I am from Leeds. I would come to Bradford, I have to say. And I think that Bradford is no less unsafe than any other place. And actually, it is pretty safe. And with all the additional measures that the mayor has paid for, I think it's a pretty safe night out.
Fantastic. So it's our job to get the word out about
absolutely
coming to Bradford.
Absolutely.
Lovely. Let's have another piece of music. What's your second piece of music?
Well, upbeat now. We're going to have a bit of CC Peniston. And finally, both my kids are gay. I've been brought up in the LGBT community since my children were teenagers. And this is always blasting out, and I love it.
Just cannot hide it. Meeting Mr.
that was finally with CC Pennystone. So, Alison, though, you mentioned about the LGBT community. What about safety and crime and, you know, how the nighttime economy impacts on the LGBT community as well?
Well, clearly, the nighttime economy and the perception of lack of safety impacts all of us, including the LGBT community. The evidence is that actually it is race that is the number one area of target for hate crime. But there is also a growing number of people from the LGBT community being targeted. And obviously, lots of people don't report. That's key, is that lots of people don't report. So these numbers are a massive underreporting of the actual. So in the last 12 months, or 12 months up to last September, race hate crime had gone up to 7,189 here in West Yorkshire, whereas sexual orientation hate crime had gone up 14.4%, but it was only 1,500. And when I say only 1,500, I don't want to minimise that, but just in relation to the amount of hate crime related to race. And then the trans community, that went up nearly 40%, but the number was only 312. Now, we know that members of the trans community are the least likely to report because of, obviously, their experience of policing, their experience of, you know, stepping out and trying to raise the profile of transphobia. We're in a bit of a hate culture at the moment.
Talking about reporting, many people don't report to the police, again, because of perceptions, because of things that have happened in the past, and also because of fear of getting the police and criminalisation and getting engaged in that criminal justice system. Mm. It might not be what exactly they want or need. Is there a need for a body of people, trained professionals or supporters or whatever, to be that sort of broker, something, a barrier, if you like, a gateway to taking further action?
Absolutely. I mean, anything we can get to encourage the LGBT plus community to report is very, very welcome. So West Yorkshire Police, I don't know if people know this, I attended LGBT, well, trans and non-binary training 2 weeks ago. So all staff are offered trans and non-binary treatment training, and all new recruits are offered, are given as mandatory trans and non-binary training by West Yorkshire Police. I attended it, it was excellent. There was a trans person who gave their lived experience, and I've just connected West Yorkshire Police with trans leads to ensure that a younger person's perspective is also a part of that training. And there's a LGBT plus scrutiny panel, so LGBT plus people can hold the police to account for the way that they deal with hate crimes and other crimes affecting LGBT people. So there are already groups and organisations who are working alongside West Yorkshire Police to improve reporting, improve the experience for that for those communities, because they're not one community, they're multifaceted and they are diverse. And we need to do more. So if any LGBT plus community organisation individual feels that they've got a way into a community that hitherto has not been accessed, please, please, please do contact me and tell me that, because West Yorkshire Police are really, really keen to give that confidence to all marginalised groups, including LGBT plus peoples, to report that crime, because it's heinous. It affects communities, individuals for a very, very long time. And as we know, it can lead to tragedy. I don't want to preempt anything, but we're hearing this week something very tragic that may or may not be linked to a person's gender identity. But we know many young people who are trans or non-binary take their own lives. So we really need to take this seriously, and West Yorkshire Police are.
Fantastic. Let's have another piece of music. What's next?
Yeah, so a bit bittersweet, actually, which I think is right following that conversation. Winner Takes It All from ABBA.
Thank you. want to talk about things we've gone through. Though it's hurting me, now it's history. I've played all my cards, and that's what you've done too. Nothing more to say, no more race to play. The winner takes it all, the loser standing small beside the victory. Shake my hand. I apologize if it makes you feel bad seeing me so tense. No self-confidence, but you see, the winner takes it all.
Oh, the winner takes it all there, by ABBA. Now, Alison, I know you grew up in Leeds. You mentioned being from Leeds. Tell us about your early life.
So my mam, as we called her, was from East Leeds, grew up in Holton Moor, Irish heritage. I moved to Seacroft when I was three from Chapeltown. We had some tragedy in our lives. My daughter, my mum and dad's daughter, my sister, was killed on Roundhay Road. And so the council moved us all to Seacroft, which was very strange for lots of reasons, because there were no black people there. They ended up being three black families on a 4,000 council estate. But we only were there because we were moved out of Chapeltown as a result of the tragedy of my sister dying. Yeah, it was both a great place to grow up and a dark and challenging place to grow up. So racism was casual. You know, the N-word was used on a very regular basis. I remember at the time, one day going in, I was fed up of it, saying to my mum, why don't you divorce my dad and marry a white man and then I'll turn white? Because I really believed that it was as simple as that. But, you know, my mum made us strong, because if you went in crying saying you'd been called the N-word, which, believe me, we used to do from time to time, she'd say, you get out there and batter them as I'd batter you. So we knew we would get a good hiding if we went in crying about the racism we were experiencing. We were expected to stand up for ourselves and fight. And that's what we did. And, you know, sometimes it was physical fighting and sometimes it was the verbal fighting, which is what I still do today. You know, I've still got the verbiage and I still do what my mum taught me to do, which is to stand up for myself, but also stand up for others, which is why I'm passionate about justice and fairness and equality. But, you know, we also had some great times there. You know, it was a real sense of community in Seacroft. We regularly had, like, the whole street out playing rounders. We were all out on the fields playing till, you know, in summer, 10 o'clock at night. We were out and about doing great things with all our neighbours, our friends. But, you know, there was the dark side too. So where I lived, I lived next door to someone where domestic abuse was very, prevalent. The one of my neighbour's children was kidnapped and sexually abused by another neighbour's family member. A whole family of children were put in care because they were sexually abused. And the family opposite, the police came and took all the sheets away one day when I'd moved out as a new wife. I'd moved out, and that family were also the children there were also being sexually abused. So it's not a surprise to know that I was also sexually abused by a neighbour. You know, this is with the dark side of my childhood, and that's not about Seacroft. That's about anywhere and everywhere that can happen. But it definitely had an impact on me, on my childhood, on my mental health, but also on my passion, as I say, for justice and fairness.
Okay, let's have another piece of music. What's next?
So I'm going to go upbeat now. That was a dark subject. So Ain't Nobody, Chaka Khan.
Got your effortlessly. That's the way.
Karma Ain't Nobody. You're listening to BCB 106.6 FM. I'm Carol Moss on One to One. My guest today is Alison Lowe, Deputy Mayor for Policing and Crime in West Yorkshire. Now, you've talked about some grim things happening to yourself and in your personal life. How did you sort of remove yourself from that and do something different?
Well, education, you know, someone famously said once. I think it's really important that, you know, we recognise as survivors that we have power. And, you know, if we give our destinies to others, then, you know, we may lose the opportunity to live the life that we deserve to live. And I recognise that university was an opportunity for me. And even though I was married, very unhappily married, living in a domestic abuse situation, I had two very small children. Well, I had one, and then I decided that I needed to get out of this situation and that education was the way out. So I applied to Leeds University, discovered the day before the interview that I was pregnant again. That was a bit of a shock. But I decided that I needed to keep on going one step in front of the other. Otherwise, I would never go. And actually, I had my daughter on the 9th of September 1987. And I started university 2 weeks later as an undergraduate with her around my neck in a sling. And I remember the university professor coming up to me, this little old guy, saying, "I hope you've made arrangements for that child," which was, you know, not a very welcoming or warm introduction to the history department. But I really quickly met other you know, tutors who were lovely and understanding, and I spent three happy years doing my my bachelor's, and I loved it so much that I stayed on and did a master's in medieval studies, all the while living in a domestic abuse situation. But university was really my escape, and it was my safe place, and we all as victims of violence need safe spaces, and that was where I found mine.
And how did you get yourself removed from that abusive relationship? Was that about a personal standing up for yourself?
So I am a planner, and while I was at university, I recognised that I needed to use my brain and the opportunities of a degree, or 2 degrees at that point, to get a job for myself, which enabled me to take myself and my children out of that situation, and that's exactly what I did. I got a good job. I started working in the third sector for a homelessness charity, and I convinced my husband at the time that if he helped me to buy a house separate to him, to the house that we lived in, that we would try and make it work. And he allowed me to buy this house. He gave me a down payment on the house. I moved into this house, and then I said, "It's over." He didn't like it, but it was just too late, and it was too bad. And eventually we divorced, and I was a single parent for many years, but I was really happy. I you know, I had autonomy, I had the ability to live freely and not live in fear, which is how I had been living. And my children don't really remember any of that violence, which I thank God for, because I was able to remove them before it impacted them.
Okay, let's have another piece of music. What's next?
So next is How You Like Me Now by The Heavy, another upbeat, funky tune.
See, I've been a bad, bad, bad man.
Now by The Heavy. And so, Alison, you threw yourself into that work in the voluntary sector. You must have found that very fulfilling, and being able to use the vast experience that you'd already gained in life, really.
Yeah, and, you know, coming from somewhere like Seacroft, you know, meeting people with addictions, meeting street homeless people, you know, I'd grown up in that environment. And so I wasn't afraid of, you know, working with that, you know, with that group of people. In fact, I thrived on it. I loved it. I love being, I'm a fixer. I like to help people. I like to solve problems. And so it was very rewarding being able to practically support people into the lives that they wanted to live rather than the lives that they found themselves in. And you know, and sometimes people wanted to be where they were, and, you know, you had to support them to do that in the best way possible too.
So talk about your decision to become a counsellor or to stand to be a counsellor.
So I lived in Chapel Town for many years in Leeds, and was really conscious. So we had an MP of a different political persuasion to me, let's put it that way. And I was really not happy that the people I lived cheek by jowl with were getting the service that we deserved. You know, we'd had the riots not long before, and there was a lot of anger about the perceived lack of opportunities and fairness for the community that I lived in. And I wanted to represent those people and become part of the solution for my community. And so I was already a member of the Labour Party. I joined when I was at university, and I wanted to become a councillor for Chapel Town. That was not possible in the end. I ended up being a councillor for Armley, but another grassroots type place where you've got people who are the salt of the earth, working class communities, so very much like Seacroft in many ways. And I felt myself really at home there amongst the people that I was honoured to be able to serve.
And you served them for 30 years?
Yeah, just short of 30 years,
wow,
yes, absolutely.
Amazing. And then you became chief executive of Touchstone.
Yes.
Tell us about Touchstone.
So Touchstone is a community-based mental health charity specialising in working with BME communities, black minority ethnic communities, LGBT plus communities, refugee asylum seeking communities, people who are often not seen, not heard, and we wanted to amplify their voices but also create opportunities for people to be part of their own solutions, to engage with mental health services, demand their entitlements, because we knew that people were overrepresented, black people in particular, overrepresented in the mental health system, and we wanted to fight against that and get justice within the systems that people often are stuck in and can't get out of.
And you find that many of the people who were experiencing mental health problems were, if you like, survivors of racism, domestic abuse,
oh, yes,
domestic violence, child sex exploitation.
Absolutely, absolutely. So trauma is a massive contributor to the, you know, people becoming criminalised, people ending up in mental health hospitals. It's definitely the case that where people have experienced trauma in their early childhood, that their life chances are stunted. But that doesn't have to be the case forever. And with the right support at the right time, with the right people who understand the journey that person's been on, anything is possible.
Great. Let's have another piece of music. What's next?
Yeah, so this is Crossroads. And actually, this was a really important piece of music for me because it was during December 1985 that I really understood that I was in a bad situation and I needed to get out. And this song is what got me there.
Like you owned my life. You never made any sacrifice. Demons ever on my trail. Standing at the crossroads of hell. I look to the left, I look to the right. Hands that grab me on the every side. Mm-hmm.
think I got my prize. Did I sell all that is mine? Think money rules and all else fails. Go sell your soul, keep your shell. I'm trying to protect what I keep inside. All the reasons why I live my life. I say the devil, he walking mad. He a fool, he a liar, conjuring a thief. Try to tell you what you want, try to tell you what you need.
So that was from Crossroads by Tracy Chapman. Well, we're coming towards the end of the programme, Alison. There's loads of more to talk about because you've done so much. But you were awarded an OBE and Honorary Doctorate of Laws from Leeds University in July 2022. How did that make you feel when you got those awards?
Well, for my last from Seacroft, it was a huge honour and I felt validated. But I also felt that the contributions of my parents, my Irish heritage mum, my Caribbean heritage dad, that it was a validation of them, of their love, because they were an interracial couple. They experienced lots of racism. I feel very emotional thinking about them. I've lost them both now. And for me, it was my gift to them, and I was so proud that I was able to amplify their love and their struggle, because they were pioneers. So that's what it meant to me. It meant thank you, mum and dad.
But you also became an honorary alderman of Leeds. Leeds must have recognised in you that sort of... it's not about star quality. It's about the standing up and talking for the people.
Yeah, I think it's about service. You know, I see myself very much as a public servant. I'm here to fight the fights that some people are not able to fight on their own. I want to enable people, empower people to do the fighting themselves, but it's not always possible. And for me, I want to get to the end of my life, look back, knowing that I stood up for people, that I did my best for people. And hopefully I will be reflected on as somebody who had honour, somebody who had integrity, and somebody who always fought for people who couldn't fight for themselves.
Well, thank you very much for being our guest today here on One to One. It's been a very emotional journey that you've taken us on, and also a very, very real and very earthy. And we're very proud to have you as our deputy mayor for West Yorkshire. Thank you very much. What's your last piece of music?
My last piece of music is actually the music I've asked my children to play at my funeral, so apt. Dry Land by Joan Armatrady.
Now that's some planning.
Yes.
Let me sail to the depths of your soul. Let me anchor as near as I can be to your shore. I'm coming in to dry land. Been a long time at sea, and the season of loving has long awaited me. Tides and waves have kept me going. I'm longing for the calm, I'm heading for the pastures. I can see on your dry land, let the sea that once did take me bring me back safety home. For I long to touch the dry land of your shore. Clear back to land.
Bring you back a gift of love, and I promise you so much more.